We welcome you to Sri Vrindavan Dham. By the causeless mercy of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, we are being given this most sacred opportunity to be together in, for those who are followers of Krishna Bhakti, this is the holiest of all holy places in all of the universe, Sri Vrindavan Dham. It is my great honor and my great fortune that you are giving me this opportunity to serve you by speaking something on behalf of my Guru Maharaj during our time here. In the Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, there is a beautiful verse. The ideal place for executing Krishna consciousness or pure bhakti is Brajabhumi or Vrindavan, where all the people naturally love Krishna and Krishna naturally loves all of them. In this regard, Srila Prabhupada, he cites the Bhagavad Gita. Could everyone hear? You could hear? Some people cannot hear. Ye yathamam prapadyante tam sthitaiva bhajamyaham. As a person approaches the Lord, Krishna reciprocates accordingly. If we give all of our hearts to Krishna, Krishna gives himself to us. The capacity of what we have to give to Krishna in relation to infinity is a drop. But yet that drop, when it is offered with love, it is more precious to Krishna than all the wealth and all the material and spiritual existence. That is his nature. If we offer a drop, he returns a bottomless, shoreless ocean of his love in reciprocation. This is the principle of bhakti. If we approach the Supreme Lord for material benefits, we will get some material benefits in due course of time. If we approach for elevation to higher planets, if we want the mystical yogic siddhis, the actual capacity to perform supernatural miracles. By chanting a mantra, we could produce things within our hands, prapti siddhi. In the yogic mystic siddhis, Simply by chanting mantras, your body could dematerialize and rematerialize any place in the universe you desire. Read minds. Control people's minds. If that's what we want, in due course we will get that. If we want mukti, that state of complete peace beyond all the dualities of this world, wherein we realize aham brahmasmi, we are eternally spirit beyond birth and beyond death. In due course of time, Krishna will give that. And if, with all humility and sincerity, we approach the Lord to serve with love, then Krishna will give himself. And that includes everything else. Here in Vrindavan, Sri Rupa Goswami had written, Anyabilasita sunyam jnana karmanya navyakam anukulyena krishna nushilanam bhaktir uttama. The meaning of pure bhakti. Untainted by any desire except to serve the Supreme Lord with love. Atapum birtvichastrestas varanashrama vibhagasha shvanushtatasya dharmasya samsadir haritosha. This is the conclusion of the Srimad Bhagavat. That the supreme perfection of whatever occupation we may be doing, of all of our responsibilities, of all of our spiritual practices, is that Krishna is pleased. Srila Prabhupada writes that this type of pure devotional service is very rare, durlabham. Why is it so rare? Krishna tells in Gita, out of thousands of people who approach me, one actually understand me as I am. Because when Krishna gives bhakti, true bhakti, he gives himself eternally. He is bhaktavatsala. The all-powerful is conquered by the love of his own devotee. Srila Prabhupada writes, although pure devotional service is so rare, Krishna will give it easily for one who is sincere, who is serious, and has no ulterior motive. Tesham satata yuktanam bhajatam priti purvakam tadami buddhi yogam tam yenamam upayantate. This is Krishna's promise in the Bhagavad Gita. For one who worships me with love, priti, I give the understanding by which they could come to me. Bhaktya tvananyaya shakya aham evam vidurarjuna. The Gita tells, only by unalloyed, undivided devotion can I be understood as I am, standing before you? It is very important when we come to Vrindavan that we truly humble ourselves to appreciate the good fortune we are receiving. Without genuine humility, there cannot be deep appreciation or gratitude. And these are preliminary qualities to actually connect to the current of grace that is flowing in this holy place. Our scriptures and our acharyas tell us the nature of the material and spiritual existence. Bhur-bhuva, swarga-loka, we are in the bhuloka, the earthly area. This universe has different divisions. Above us is swarga-loka, the incredible heavenly planets. Above there is Mahaloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, the plates of the greatest, greatest, most enlightened rishis. And then there is Brahmaloka, the highest planet, where Lord Brahma resides. But beyond this material creation is the Brahman, or the Brahma Jyoti, the all-pervading spiritual light that is inside and outside of everything within creation, and at the same time expands infinitely everywhere beyond material creation. For those who approach the impersonal aspect of the absolute truth, liberation is entering into the light of Brahman. But within that spiritual sky of Brahman, the scriptures and the sages tell us there are spiritual planets called Vaikuntha, Paravyoma. And in those spiritual planets, the Supreme Absolute Truth, the one God of all living beings, manifests various forms and aspects for the singular purpose of giving love and receiving love. Liberation in Vaikuntha, the eternal soul that is now the very life force within us, assumes an original spiritual personality and body. We always have it. It is just in a dormant state as long as we are covered by illusion or maya. But in that state, the all-beautiful, all-loving Lord reciprocates in loving relationships forever with all of his devotees. There is the place of Ram, Narasingha, Shiva, Vaman. And of all those planets, there is a place called Madhurya Dham, or Goloka, which is the abode of Krishna. It is not that they are different people, same person, different roles. People speak about God being great. In the Vedas, we understand to some extent just how infinitely great God is. What is the capacity of the Supreme Personality of Godhead to reciprocate love with all different kinds of souls in infinite varieties of ways? Goloka is the place of Purna Brahman, Purna Avatar, where the Lord manifests the fullest extent of supremacy. In the sense that his Aishwarya, or his infinite power and greatness, moves to the side. Overshadowed by the Lord's infinite sweetness, beauty, charm, and love. Where the supremacy of God is the controller of all controllers, Parameshwara, is overshadowed, or let us say, moves to the side for intimate, loving relationships. Where Krishna assumes the role of our friend, or our child, or our lover. This is Goloka. And once in a day of Brahma, which is about 8,064,000,000 years, Krishna personally comes in this original form and brings with him his eternal abode. And this Vrindavan of this world, when Krishna manifested 5,000 years ago, he came with his abode. An identical expansion of his eternal residence with his loving devotees, Nanda, Yashoda, Sri Radha, Brisha Bhanu Kirtida, Balaramji, Stoka Krishna, Sri Dama, Subal, Lalita, Vishaka. These are all eternal expansions of the one Supreme Lord from the spiritual world who perform beautiful pastimes in this world just to attract our hearts back into that pastime of love. Srila Prabhupada explains how Krishna tells in the Gita, Paritra naya sadhunam vinashaya chuduskritam dharma samstapanaradaya sambhavami yuge yuge. That the Supreme Lord comes to annihilate the miscreants, to reestablish the principles of true dharma, and to give pleasure and protection to the pious. But actually, the absolute truth, Parabrahman, could do that through his energies. He can, through Shaktivesh, through his empowered representatives. But the Lord comes in his original transcendental nature into this world, especially for the purpose of performing such beautiful pastimes and giving us such deep, profound teachings to awaken our love for him. Vrindavan is always Vrindavan. I will give an analogy. Each and every one of us is an eternal soul, Satchit Ananda. Eternal, full of knowledge and full of happiness. But due to negligence, we engage in so many varieties of selfish activities. And in doing so, so much pollution is accumulated in our mind that we can no longer recognize who we really are. The mind is a mirror. The mind is meant to reflect the pure nature of the soul and its love for Krishna. But when the mind is covered by dust because we forget what its real purpose is, then all we see is dust. Vrindavan is not different than Krishna. It's Krishna's abode. Sri Radharani is Vrindavaneshwari. Vrindavan is the expansion of her love to facilitate unlimited pleasures to Krishna. It is the abode of love. But Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena, although Krishna's in our heart and Krishna's everywhere, we cannot see unless the power of our love for our heart, when that awakens, it dissipates all the fog of illusion. The world is a mirror of the condition of our own minds. Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur said, I only find faults in others because I am honeycombed with faults myself. When there is pollution within our own minds, then we will simply see whatever pollutions that people have covered this holy dham with on the external level of consciousness. Unfortunately, in recent times, so many people come to Vrindavan without really coming to serve the Dham. People come in a material way. The difference between material and spiritual is very simple. Material is when I put myself in the center. My focus and my purpose is about me. What can I gain from this? In a selfish way. When we want sensory pleasures, when we want profit, when we want prestige, distinction, these are selfish desires. When we come to Vrindavan with these motivations, then the tendency is that's what we offer. And therefore there is so much pollution. On a gross and subtle level. But if we come with a deep appreciation, you see, there is absolutely nothing that human beings can do to the truth of Vrindavan. Because Vrindavan is a spiritual place. This is always the eternal abode of the Lord. When we cover it in so many ways with our own pollutions, We're only covering our own abilities to appreciate what is really there. And we're making it so much more difficult for other people. But when there's actual desire to serve with love, although we want to make Vrindavan clean as a seva, and we pray and fight for that purpose, but we are seeing what it really is. Krishna's divine abode. Vrindavanam parityajya padam ekam nagacchati. Krishna never, for all eternity, takes a single step out of Vrindavan. This is his eternal abode. Even in his lila in this world, when he appeared to go to Mathura or Dwarka, or when he left this universe at the end of his pastimes, Govinda Adi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami, that original Govinda, the king of Madhurya Ras, forever remains in Vrindavan. And when we have spiritual vision, when we have this appreciation, Krishna reveals himself to us. Narottam Das Thakur, he taught us the attitude of approaching Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada explains, you cannot actually come to Vrindavan by buying a ticket. You can get an airline ticket to Delhi, you could get a train ticket to Agra or to Mathura, you could get a tanga or a taxi or a bus to Vrindavan. That can put our physical body in the physical proximity, which is Vrindavan. But Vrindavan is a state of consciousness. We cannot actually enter into Vrindavan unless we come in this spirit of taking ourself out of the center and putting Krishna in the center. Actually, Krishna is always in the center. It is our illusion that we forget that. This is the nature of love, to put the object of love in the center of everything we do. It is practical. Yat karoshi yad ashnasi yad juhoshi tadasi yat yatapasya sikondiya tat kurushma darpanam. Krishna tells, all that you do, all that you give away, whatever austerities you perform, whatever yoga, whatever occupation, whatever family responsibilities, whatever relationships, just put me in the center. Do it as an offering of love to me. And it will bring eternal charm, unlimited happiness to whatever we do, because it becomes real. It's the awakened state of our true self. Janasya yoham mamaham mameti. These three principles are the very root of all suffering. The tendency to think in terms of I and mine. I, me, and mine. And Maya is so subtle and so powerful that she will try to delude us even while we're trying to do devotional service. Even when we're chanting the holy names, Param Vijayate Sri Krishna Sankirtanam, the prime benediction for all humanity is this Sankirtan. Kalera dosanide rajan asti hiku mahan guna kirtana deva krishnasya mukta sangha parambarajet. The age of Kali is an ocean of faults, but there's one benediction. Simply chanting Krishna's holy names in kirtan, one can attain the perfection of liberation. It's the ultimate blessing that the all-beautiful, all-loving Lord of all beings has appeared within the sound of the name. But Maya's power, we can be doing kirtan, putting ourselves in the center. Let me become famous. Let me become popular. Let me gain something through this chanting. May people love me for this chanting. Real kirtan is not just the chanting. It's the consciousness within where we chant. Trinadapi sunichena taror ibasihishnana amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. Lord Chaitanya said, this is the most important principle to understand when we're doing kirtan or japa. To be deeply attentive to our chanting. To be chanting to put Krishna in the center of our life and to actually inspire for Krishna to be to inspire everyone to see Krishna in the center of their life. Not me, not mine, but Krishna. And when we have this humility, then Krishna will manifest through us. Individually and collectively. Sometimes when we do service, what can I gain from this service? Either on the gross level of physical rewards or on the subtle level of fame, prestige. Real kirtan is to give Krishna fame, to give Krishna prestige. The reality is Krishna is supremely famous. That's one of his six opulences. All we have to do is just recognize it and help other people recognize it. And when our happiness is in putting Krishna in the center, our happiness becomes infinite and eternal, because Krishna is infinitely and eternally the supreme object of love. Bhoktaram jagatapasam sarva loka maheshwaram suhritam sarva bhutanam gyatva mam shanti mrichchati. Krishna tells in Gita, if we want to be peaceful, actual peace, there's no other way except to recognize that the Supreme Absolute Truth is the proprietor of everything that exists, and that everything is ultimately meant for God's enjoyment, and that Krishna is our most intimate, loving friend in every situation.
Gita tells, when we have this understanding and live accordingly, then we can attain a peace that none of the reversals, dualities, neither earthquakes or tsunamis or nuclear bombs or death itself or even universal annihilation, nothing could disturb that peace. Because it's within us. It's the awakening of our own souls and our own love for Krishna. Narottam Das Thakur, he teaches, when we approach Vrindavan, our mood should be to put Krishna in the center. My Lord, how can I serve you? Vishaya chatiya khabe sudahabe mana khabe mama hairbo sri Vrindavan. Thakur Narottam sings, when will that day come? Well, I will be free from all of my material desires. Desire for profit, adoration, distinction. When my life is truly to come to serve and give pleasure, then I will see Vrindavan. Not only will we see Vrindavan when we come here to this holiest of all holy places, but when we have this consciousness of putting Krishna in the center, we will see Vrindavan everywhere. Through our feelings of separation, through our remembrance of Krishna, Vrindavanam Purityaja Padam Ekam Nagachati. Krishna never takes a step out of Vrindavan. But yet Krishna's in all of our temples. And Krishna's in our hearts. And Krishna's in everyone's hearts. And Krishna's in his holy names when we chant. Wherever we chant the name sincerely, we are in Vrindavan. And we can actually recognize it when we learn to really appreciate what is Krishna's mercy? What is the mercy of the Guru and the Vaishnavas? What is the glory of the chanting of the holy names and the opportunity to serve? Appreciation is of paramount importance in order to understand something's value. And if we do not understand its value, we will take the most precious thing to be something ordinary. Take it for granted. And not really benefit from what we have. If you have $10 million in a bank account, but you don't know you have the bank account, what is the use of all that money? That's the situation of all of us. Our natural inheritance is prema bhakti. Eternal happiness, eternal liberation, Krishna, Sri Radha, and Vrindavan. That's what Krishna's given all of us. But we forgot where it is. We even forgot we have it. It's our nature. Jeev jago, jeev jago, goda chandra bole, kota nidra jayo maya pisachira kole. This was Lord Chaitanya's message. Wake up, wake up, wake up, sleeping souls. You are sleeping on the lap of Maya. Wake up. Chant these holy names, Mukunda Madhava Hari. And understand who you really are. Understand that the real happiness, the real wealth you're seeking in so many situations is within yourself. Bhakti is the process, the art of awakening our true spiritual potential to love. And one of the nine processes of bhakti is padasevanam. Saravana kirtana smarana bandana padasevana dasire pujana sakijana atma nivedana. There are nine processes of devotional service, beginning with hearing about the Lord, harikatha, chanting in kirtan, in japa, speaking. Smaranam, remembering, praying, worshiping, serving, becoming a friend, surrendering our everything. And padasevana means to serve the lotus feet of the Lord. And one of the elements of padasevanam is pilgrimage to holy places. One of the nine limbs of bhakti is to come to holy places like Vrindavan, Navadvip, Puri, Dwarka. With a will to spiritually progress. We come to these holy places not so much to see as to serve. Sri Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur told, do not try to see Krishna. Try to serve Krishna in such a way that he's pleased to see you. And that is how we approach a holy place. What can we see just with these little eyes? But when we come to these holy places with a deep desire to serve the Dham itself, to serve the deities, to serve the Brijavasis, to serve the cows, to serve the Vaishnavas, the devotees, to serve the Lord in his names, through that service attitude, Vrindavan reveals herself to us. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj, one time, somebody who was living here in Vrindavan doing bhajan came to Srila Gaur Kishore Das Babaji Maharaj. And he told him that I have just bought a nice property in Vrindavan. And Gaur Kishore Das Babaji understood his consciousness. And he became very strong with this person. In fact, he chastised him. He said, who are you to think you could buy property in Vrindavan? What kind of wealth do you think you have that you could buy property in Vrindavan? According to the saints and according to the scriptures, one single grain of dust in Vrindavan. It is Chintamani. It is transcendental jewel. All the wealth in all this world, in all the heavenly planets, in all the creation is not enough to purchase a single grain of dust from Vrindavan. And you are thinking you just bought an acre of land? You are in illusion. This is Krishna's abode. You are not the proprietor. What a grand illusion. You have a deed with a contract and a land and a stamp by the government, and you say, I am the proprietor. Sri Radharani is Vrindavaneshwari. She's the queen of Vrindavan. Every molecular particle is her property. And it has infinite value because it is her property. So on a superficial material level, we could think like this. I was just reading about when Srila Prabhupada got the land for the Krishna Balaram temple. He sent, somebody was actually going to donate this land. Do you all know the story? Please raise your hand if you do not know the story. Raise your hand if you know the story. Even I don't know this story. But I'll try to tell something. Because what can we know? Isaac Newton said, in trying to know what this universe is, he said, I'm just picking up little pebbles of sand on the shore of the knowledge that's meant to be gained. And that's the material world. What to speak of the spiritual world? Anyways, Srila Prabhupada, he wanted a wonderful place in Vrindavan where people could come from all over the world to actually experience the bhakti here. The blessings here in Vrindavan are infinite. Every grain of dust, every tree, every particle is saturated with the love and the devotion of all the great acharyas who have done their bhajan here. And Sri Sri Radha Krishna, on a spiritual platform, are eternally performing their pastimes here. Wherever we perform our devotion, the results or the benefits are multiplied many times over in Vrindavan. And when we are in Vrindavan in the month of Kartik, those benefits are thousands of times even more. So to be here in the holiest place, at the holiest time, with so many holy people, is such a blessing. Srila Prabhupada, he lived in Vrindavan, at the Radha Damodar temple, for over 6 years. And his plan, he was feeling, he was experiencing, he was reciprocating with Krishna's and Radharani's grace here. And his dream was to bring people from all over the world to get the blessings, the grace, and be purified here. So he left Vrindavan and he went to Mumbai, then to Calcutta, then the Jaladuta to New York. And in 1970, he brought a group of his devotees back to India. He was traveling to various places. In December of 1971, November actually, he came with about 30 or 40 of his devotees to Vrindavan. First time in the history of the world, as far as I know, that any group of foreigners have ever come to Vrindavan. And the Brijabasis were astounded. They were not just a group of foreigners, but everyone, the ladies, everyone had tilak. Everyone had japamala. Everyone had dhotis and saris. Everyone was carrying mridangas and karatals and performing kirtan and japa, and with all their hearts came to worship Radha Krishna. How the Brijabasis were happy. And I was here at that time. I was just kind of very shyly standing in the corner watching all of this with great wonder. And from the little corner, I watched Yadubar Prabhu and Vishakha Devi get married. In Vrindavan, presided over by Srila Prabhupada. It was beautiful. And one of my godbrothers, Nanda Kumar, was the pujari. I was sleeping on the bank of the Yamuna. They asked me, why don't you stay with us? We're all living here. But I was very attached to the bank of the Yamuna, so I said, I will come. So at about 4 in the morning, I would come, and Nanda Kumar would engage me in collecting flowers for the deities. He actually taught me how to pluck flowers from different... We would go to various places of Vrindavan and pluck little flowers from the vines to offer to Thakurji, to Sri Sri Radharani and Krishna. During their travels, someone offered Srila Prabhupada some land. And in India, when somebody offers you land, that could mean anything. It was Kshirodakshayi Vishnu Prabhu at the time. He was actually, his origin was Indian, but Srila Prabhupada met him in London and he became a devotee. And he was a businessman. So Prabhupada sent him to try to arrange to get the land. And Srila Prabhupada was very, he was infinitely compassionate and loving and spiritually wise and totally transcendental, but also practical. And he knew that devotees have a tendency in their attempts to be transcendental, they become very impractical. Because while totally depending on Krishna, we have to honor and respect the way the world works and adjust accordingly. So this person wrote to Prabhupada, this devotee, and said, he's going to give us the land, he's going to give us the land. Prabhupada said, get the deed signed. The devotee didn't think of that, you know. Forgot about that. Okay. He went to the person, I want the deed signed. Deed? Why do you want a deed? You know. So then it was becoming very serious. So the person said, I want to give you this land. And then when it came to the time of signing the deed, Srila Prabhupada said, I will come at that time. At that point, the person said, I don't know if Srimati Radharani wants to give you the land or not. How can I give it unless Radharani assures me that this is what she wants? Because it's not my land to give, it's Radharani's land. And I don't know. The person, the devotee said, well, I don't know Radharani, but I know my Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada. I know he really wants the land. And he wants to use it in Krishna's service. He doesn't want to claim proprietorship over it. He wants to use it to serve Vrindavan, to serve Srimati Radharani and Lord Sri Krishna. Let me think about it. And then, finally, after some days, the owner said, there's only one way to know if Radharani wants me to give this land or not. Said, I am going to take two pieces of paper and I will write yes on one piece and fold it up and write no on the other piece and fold it up and then mix them up and put them on the altar in front of Sri Radharani's lotus feet. And then you should pick one of those. And if you pick no, then I will never in my life give you the land. And if you pick yes, I will give you the land instantly. This person was all alone. He said, I can't do that. He said, my guru told me I'm not allowed to gamble. This is gambling. So then the person said, then you will not get the land. There is no question. Either you do this or the deal is off. So he was all alone. He had no one to consult. And it had to be, she said, either do it now or never. So what? This devotee, from the core of his heart, he prayed to Prabhupada, he prayed to Srimati Radharani, please give me the yes paper. Now put yourself in his position. Srila Prabhupada is in Calcutta or something and he's waiting for the news and he doesn't know what's happening here. And he's so eager to serve Radharani and Krishna here in Vrindavan. So he approached the altar. Put yourself in his body for a moment. Would you be nervous? He was trembling. He was really nervous. Oh, how he was praying. This vandanam, this process of devotional service. He was really, really deeply stretched. Krishna, Radharani, please, Prabhupada, please. He was praying to everybody, please. And the papers looked exactly the same. And they were folded. And he lifted one. And the whole destiny of Prabhupada's movement in Vrindavan was in his hands. He opened it. On it was written, yes. Srila Prabhupada was very happy when he got the news.
And immediately,
he sent two of his most faithful, devoted, competent of his followers, Yamuna Devi and Gurudas Prabhu. He told them, you go to Vrindavan and you lead this project. So they came. They came, I believe it was in April. And actually, I think they came just about the time when this land thing was happening. But when they came to Vrindavan, it was 125 degrees Fahrenheit, which means approximately 52 degrees Celsius.
It was an extremely hot summer. This is 1972.
And I was here. And I remember they were living on the rooftop at Radha Damodar Temple because they didn't have the land yet. I'm going to come back to that. Prabhupada came immediately and he said, get the cornerstone now. We will sign the deed. As soon as the deed is signed, we will have the cornerstone laying ceremony. We'll put an antashesha under the ground, and then the land belongs to Krishna and Radharani. So he came. He was only coming for a day or 2 days. And they were signing the deed at the Radha Damodar Temple. And Shamsundar Prabhu was Prabhupada's secretary. He had a Royal Electric typewriter. And Prabhupada was dictating the deed to him, and he was going. That's the way typewriters used to sound. And right when they were in the middle of the deed, all the power went out. And in those days, you don't know when the power was going to go back on in Vrindavan. Could be out for the rest of the day. So how do you write a deed? Because electric typewriters don't work without electricity. So Srila Prabhupada turned to Yamuna Devi. Because Yamuna Devi was a master at the art of calligraphy. That means very, very ornamented, beautiful, artistic handwriting. And oh, how she could. Actually, when Srila Prabhupada saw her writing in the early days in San Francisco and London, he would have bhakti sastra exams for the devotees. They were very simple in those days. And he would have Yamuna Devi personally handwrite the diploma, the certificate for each devotee. And she would put gold embossments. And so Prabhupada told her that I'll dictate the letter, and then you should make it a beautiful artistic calligraphy deed. And meanwhile, many of Srila Prabhupada wanted witnesses there. So he had many of his godbrothers, many of the prominent Goswamis of Vrindavan, many of the government officials for Vrindavan. They were all sitting in the room. And the typewriter ended. So Yamuna Devi had 20 minutes. And she wrote this deed, according to how Srila Prabhupada dictated it. And she put gold on some of the letters and put nice stampings on it. It was beautiful. And she brought it in. And Srila Prabhupada held it up for everyone to see.
No one has ever seen a legal deed like this. It was like the writings of the six Goswamis in English. People, Prabhupada was showing everyone. He said, you see this nice daughter of mine, Yamuna Devi? You see how she makes her deeds? And everyone was deeply, deeply inspired. And Srila Prabhupada signed, and everyone signed. So that original deed was artistically written by Yamuna Devi. And that is how the land was procured at Krishna Balaram Temple. And I was recently reading part of the manuscript of Yamuna Devi's biography. It began an autobiography. But she had a feeling that Srila Prabhupada would be calling her back to him. So she requested her very dear lifelong friend, Dina Tatarni Devi, to complete her memories if she physically departs before she does. Yamuna Devi explains it was 52 degrees Celsius. That means 125 degrees Fahrenheit. And she's from Oregon, which is quite a cold, windy place near the ocean on the west coast of the northern part of America. And there were 5 men, and she was the only lady. It was so hot. And every day, because April, May, it kept getting hotter and hotter. And the nights were as hot as the days. And on the roof, all the men were sleeping out under the sky, where at least there was some air and some breeze, little bit. But because she was a lady, she couldn't sleep on the roof with all of them, so she had to sleep in this tiny little room that hardly had a window, and there was no electricity, and no running water, and no fan. And compared to the 120 or the 52 degrees Celsius outside, it was hotter inside. It was like an oven. How to sleep? She said she would go downstairs and get water and soak a cloth with water, like one of her saris, and just put it on her whole body, just for some little sense of moisture. But within 10 minutes, it was bone dry. But she writes that even though it was so difficult, what to speak of everything else they had to do. They had to build a temple. They didn't have hardly any money. They didn't know how to do anything, but they had to build a temple. They had to survive with nothing. But then she would remember that for 6 years, Srila Prabhupada, he lived through the summers here at Radha Damodar Temple in the same place. He didn't have anything more than I did. And if my Guru Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada, lived here, and he endured all these difficulties for all of us, I should be joyful. I should be grateful to endure these difficulties in my service to him. And her life became so meaningful. And and so joyful. The situation didn't change, but her consciousness changed. What was the change in consciousness? This is crucial for all of us to understand. She was grateful. And therefore, she was able to genuinely, from the core of her heart, appreciate what she was being given. This is the way we enter Vrindavan. Yamuna Devi was not here to enjoy. If she was here to enjoy, she would be suffering miserably. She was here to be enjoyed. She was here to serve. And how was she able to see that? How was she able to transform her consciousness? Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu told us that the only way to understand Vrindavan, the only way to understand Krishna, the only way to understand bhakti, the only way to understand kirtan is Mahajano Yena Katha Sapanta, which means to follow in the footsteps of the great souls. That's what she captured in her heart. Sitting at night, sleepless, in a burning oven, with hardly any air to breathe, knowing that it's just going to get hotter and hotter for the next few months, and having so many responsibilities and so much service to do that was so confusing sometimes as far as the physical execution. But she just remembered her guru, Srila Prabhupada. He lived in this building. He lived in this place. He passed through the same summers serving his guru, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. How my Gurudev was so grateful to be right beside the samadhi of Rupa Goswami, Jiva Goswami, Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami, right beside the Seva Kunj, the place of Sri Krishna and Sri Radha's Raslila. When she remembered the greatness of Prabhupada's example, when she remembered the opportunity she had to follow in his footsteps and to serve him, the heat didn't change. The circumstance didn't change. But her consciousness totally transformed. And what was painful became joyful. She actually entered into the true spirit of Vrindavan, because she came in the mood of being the servant of the servant of the servant. There's a poem by a great saint of the Pushti Marg. He writes that when I'm walking through the forest of Vrindavan, and a thorn pierces deeply into my bare foot. How many of you have had that experience? Say Hari Bol. Say it louder, please. This Vaishnav, this great devotee said, when that thorn pierces my foot, because it's a thorn of Vrindavan, I feel 10 million times more happiness than the experience of mukti, of being eternally liberated in the Brahman realization. 10 million times more happiness. So please, if you get pierced by thorns during the yatra, try to remember how fortunate you are. It's a matter of consciousness. If we actually appreciate the blessing we have of being in Vrindavan, appreciate who Vrindavan is, then our hearts are actually receptive to really receive the grace of Vrindavan. Srila Prabhupada said, when coming to Vrindavan, we should be in the mood of Akrura. After Krishna liberated Keshi and Aristasura and Vyomasura, Kamsa, the king of Mathura, he was becoming extremely disturbed, because he understood Krishna was the eighth son of Devaki. He was going to kill him unless he killed Krishna. So he arranged two brutal Rakshasa powerful wrestlers to fight with Krishna and Balaram, and also arranged a massive elephant to assist. And he told Akrura, go and bring Krishna and Balaram to Mathura. So Akrura, he loved Krishna. He loved Krishna more than everything on earth. He loved Krishna more than anyone on earth. He knew that Krishna was the Supreme Lord. He was his uncle. Krishna was his nephew. And he was being sent on a mission, and the purpose was to kill Krishna and Balaram. So as he was riding in his chariot, he was praying, even though I'm on such a bad mission of such a bad person, Krishna will understand. He knows my heart. He knows my love. And I will see him. After all these years, I will see Krishna. And I will serve Krishna. And I will surrender my heart and my life to Krishna. And all the way, tears pouring from his eyes, his heart, in such anticipation, eagerness to surrender, to serve, and to give his full body, mind, words, and love to Krishna. And that was his prayers. He was deeply absorbed in that spirit. And when he came to the outskirts of Vrindavan, In that state of mind, everything he saw, actually, he was able to see the spiritual world. Yegatamam prapadyante tams tataiva bhajamyaham. As we approach, as we surrender to Krishna, Krishna reveals himself accordingly. Vrindavan is his abode. As Akura was coming, he saw in the sacred dust of Vrindavan the footprints of Krishna and Balaram. Because he was approaching with such humility, with such gratitude, with such appreciation, and he was feeling himself so infinitely fortunate, a fortune he did not deserve. When he saw the footprints of Krishna, his love for Krishna awakened in such a way, in ecstasy. He fell from his chariot and he laid on the ground and put his body fully in the dust of that footprint of Krishna. He gave his life. And when he went forward, he met with Krishna and Balaram. And Krishna was like a playful child. He smiled upon Akrura. He knew his heart. Akrura was a messenger of Kamsa. But Krishna doesn't see the external aspects. Srila Prabhupada explains, Krishna does not see everything that is offered. He sees the intent, the purpose in which it is offered. Now, for many people, they would think Akrura was really a terrible person. Messenger of Kamsa to bring Krishna back to Vrindavan with the intent to destroy him? But Krishna's the Paramatma. Krishna understood Akrura's heart. He was coming with love, with total faith, surrender, with the will to serve. He was coming to offer his life. Krishna smiled upon him. Krishna knew everything. He embraced Akrura. He honored and respected Akrura and brought him home for prasad. Akrura's mission was to take Krishna out of Vrindavan for the first time. Everyone else in the whole Braj Bhumi was very disturbed with this Akrura. But Krishna understood his heart and was pleased. Srila Prabhupada tells, with this mood of surrender. And what does surrender mean? Sharanagati. Surrender is not defeat. In the material sense, when one army loses the war to another, they surrender. There's nothing sweet about that.
But Sharanagati is the sweetest of all sweet things. It's when, out of love, out of gratitude, we surrender our will to the will of our beloved Krishna.
It's the eternal, final conquest of truth over illusion. It's when our love for God conquers over our false ego, the ahankar. It's when the bliss, the ananda of the soul once and for all conquers all the miseries due to envy and lust and greed and arrogance and illusion.
Sharanagati means liberation. Liberation from selfishness and egoism. Liberation from birth and death. It means Sharanagati, entering into the realm of pure, unalloyed love. To receive Krishna's infinite love and to offer our love. And the Srimad Bhagavatam tells, when you water the root of the tree, every part of the tree is nourished. In that Sharanagati, in that sweet surrender of love to Krishna, then we recognize the truth. Mamayavam so jiva loke jiva bhuta sanata. Krishna says, when one is enlightened by this truth, one sees that all living beings are in me, are of me, and are mine. Aham bija pradapita. We see every living being as a part of Krishna. And therefore, inherently, we love everyone. We see everything that exists as Krishna's property. Someone asked Srila Prabhupada once, how do we see Krishna everywhere? Because Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita, for one who sees me everywhere and everything in me, for him I am never lost, nor is he ever lost to me. How are we supposed to see Krishna everywhere? Srila Prabhupada, because of his deep compassion, because he cared so deeply for everyone, he could make the most profound, inconceivable, philosophical concepts so simple and practical to understand. May I tell you his answer?
No.
Now that's a very, very deep, profound, mystical, inconceivable conception. How to see Krishna everywhere. Not like after many births when I'm liberated. Today, how do I do that? Srila Prabhupada pointed to his table, his spectacles or eyeglasses were sitting there. Srila Prabhupada said, when you see these eyeglasses, what do you think? And the devotee said, I think these are Prabhupada's eyeglasses. And he said, and what do you feel when you see those eyeglasses? He said, well, when I see the eyeglasses, I remember you, and when I remember you, my heart fills with love for you. He said, just like that. Everything is Krishna's. As we become Krishna conscious, we see that everything is Krishna's. And therefore, everything we see, it reminds us of Krishna. And when we're reminded of Krishna, we feel so grateful.
and our love awakens for Krishna. When we read Krishna book, when we chant the names of Krishna, when we read the Bhagavad Gita, the Srimad Bhagavatam, the more we know about Krishna, the more we naturally love Krishna, and whatever we see when it reminds us of Krishna, I see a pillar. I see a floor. I see a light bulb. There's no blissancy in that kind of stuff. But spiritual vision means this is Krishna's energy. That means Krishna's in his energy. And I remember Krishna. And I remember Krishna's names. And I remember Krishna's pastimes. And I remember the beautiful descriptions of Krishna's form. And I appreciate. And seeing that floor is awakening love in my heart. That is Krishna consciousness. This is how we enter Vrindavan. We're coming as beggars. Janmaishwaraya Shruti Shribir Edamana Madhapuma Naivarhati Vedatam Tvam Akinchana Gocharam. Kunti Devi prayed that Krishna, those who are too much attached to and proud of their wealth, their education, their beauty, or their high birth or placement in society, they cannot chant your holy names with humility and feeling. Tvam akinchana gocharam. You are the property of those who are impoverished. What does that mean? That doesn't mean to be in poverty on a material level. It doesn't mean necessarily that if you give away all your wealth and you leave your family and you sleep under a tree, you're going to be able to chant the holy names purely. Most people, if they do that, they'll die. And they'll be in so much anxiety. Yudhisthira Maharaj was the king. Parikshit Maharaj was the king with palace. But they were akinchana gocharam because they understood nothing is mine. Krishna tells in the Gita, I'm the intelligence of the intelligent. I'm the strength of the strong. I'm the ability in people. And I'm the proprietor of everything. We are caretakers. We are instruments. It's not our position to lord it over. It's not our position to exploit. It's not our position to take credit. That is bondage. The liberated state, the free condition. Gopi Bhartur Padakamala Yora Dasa Dasa Das Anudas. Akinchana gochara means to genuinely feel in our heart, I am the servant of the servant of the servant. And my only wealth, my only property is the opportunity to serve. Whatever we do, Krishna sees to the extent that this is our intent. And that is how he reciprocates. When we come to Vrindavan, in our hearts we're coming like
beggars. We come to beg for mercy, beg for grace, beg for the opportunity to hear about Krishna, to chant Krishna's names, beg to serve, beg for that love. And when that eagerness consumes us, then we are actually in Vrindavan. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, how much he valued Vrindavan. You see, when we see how the great personalities perceived Vrindavan, then we get some understanding of how we can enter into Vrindavan. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he wanted to see Gopal, Srinathji, who was residing on the top of Govardhan Hill. More than anything in creation, practically, he was yearning to see the darshan of his param gurus, Ishtadev. But he was seeing Govardhan as Krishna's body. And he would not put his foot on Krishna's body. He circumambulated the whole Govardhan Hill, but he was seeing Krishna directly, personally, in Govardhan. When he first approached Giriraj, the first stone he saw of Govardhan Hill, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, was a big stone. He embraced that stone. He was weeping and weeping and weeping, torrents of tears. In the mood of Sri Radha, who he was directly embracing the body of Krishna. Srinathji Gopal, he had to arrange a special pastime because he wanted, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu was longing to see Srinathji Gopal, Gopal was longing to see him. Yayatamam prapadyante. When we yearn to see Krishna, Krishna will yearn to see us. When we take him for granted, he will just, all right, go ahead, do what you do. But he would not put his foot on Govardhan Hill. So one day, while Lord Chaitanya was there, somebody came to the village of Aniyor and said, there is an army of Turkish soldiers that are about to attack here. So we should all evacuate and we should hide Gopal. So they went up the hill and they took Srinathji and took him down the hill and brought him to a little village not far from Giriraj. And Lord Chaitanya went to that village. And he did not leave Srinathji Gopal for all those days. He was dancing and singing for Gopal. And after some days, they realized it was all a rumor. There was never any armies or soldiers anywhere. So they run and had a procession back, and Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is dancing and singing. Went to climb upon Govardhan Hill with Gopal, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu stopped and offered his dandavats, his prostrated obeisances. This was his appreciation of Vrindavan. Not to take it for granted. We are not supposed to see with our eyes, we are supposed to see with our ears. As we hear, the great personalities have approached Braj Bhumi. As we read in the scriptures, that is how we see. Srila Prabhupada. He heard that the devotees went to Radha Kund, holiest of all holy places. Sri Radha Kund. That place at the foot of Govardhan Hill is not different than Sri Radharani. The water of that kund is Sri Radha's love. Her body, her love in liquid form is in Radha Kund. And Krishna personally spoke that Sri Radha, as you are most dear to me, in the same way your kund, Radha Kund, is most dear to me. And Rupa Goswami describes the glories of Sri Radha Kund. Raghunath Das Goswami, our Prayojana Acharya, who taught us the highest limits of love of God, made his residence on bank of Radha Kund. And the devotees were swimming and joking. Prabhupada was not happy with that. We have to understand, appreciate, humble ourselves with gratitude to actually enter into Vrindavan. And he taught us something. It's not just an external method. It's a state of consciousness. Everything Srila Prabhupada was teaching us was to transform our consciousness, but we have to take it deeply. He said, when you go to Radha Kund, it should be in a prayerful mood. Bow down. And your bath should be to just take a drop or a few drops of that sacred water and sprinkle it on your head. What does that mean? To deeply humble ourselves. To feel so infinitely grateful. So infinitely disqualified for the amount of mercy that we are receiving. That to just touch a drop of this water is an inconceivable blessing. We should be weeping. We should be on our knees forever, offering gratitude. I don't deserve this. But by the mercy of Guru and the Vaishnavas, by the mercy of Sri Radharani, this drop, I get to see Radha Kund and be touched by a drop of that water. Whether we put a drop on our head or whether we fully submerge ourselves in a bath in Radha Kund, the actual true spiritual benefits that we're going to access is to the degree we have that consciousness. That this drop is more priceless than anything. To be touched by this drop is a greater blessing than earning millions of crores of rupees
than living in beautiful palaces. It's more precious than having millions of followers who honor me or worship me. It's more precious than being liberated from suffering from this world forever. It's more precious than all the cities of the mystics. This is Sri Radha's love. This drop from Radha Kund is considered the most precious thing in existence by Krishna himself. And who am I? With all my lust and my envy and my anger and my greed and all my illusions and all my attachments, who am I to approach this drop? But by the mercy of Guru and Vaishnavas, by the mercy of Sri Radha, I'm being touched by this drop. This is the spirit Srila Prabhupada taught us. How to approach Vrindavan. How to approach the holy name. How to approach the opportunity to serve in whatever situation that may be. This is Krishna consciousness. We're conscious of Krishna's grace, Krishna's beauty, Radha's love. And when we're conscious of that, how can we be proud? Pride, false pride, is a gross exposure of how far away we are from Krishna. To the degree we connect to divine grace, we are humbled. Humbled in a way that we're so grateful, so eager to serve and to reciprocate with that love. That humility, that gratitude, that appreciation makes our service irresistible to Krishna. How is that? Sri Radha is the Hladini Shakti. She is the pleasure potency of Lord Krishna. She is the reservoir of all prem or love. When we connect to her grace through bhakti, then that devotion, that love that awakens in us, it's the grace of Sri Radha. And when we offer that to Krishna, even a drop of her love, like a drop of Radha Kund, that drop coming from us is irresistible to Krishna. This is bhakti. This is Vrindavan. This is the realm of the magic of the highest reality of the spiritual world. Should I continue? King Prataparudra. He was the king of all of Orissa. Majestic Gajapati. Beautiful palace, armies, great wealth. But he understood from his guru, Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya, that Lord Chaitanya was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Mahajano yena katasa banta. When he saw how Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was transformed from being a liberated soul in mukti to be an ecstatic follower of prema bhakti. He wanted that. Sarvabhauma Bhattacharya was asked by King Pratabharocha, who is this sannyasi that has just come to Puri? I heard about him. Sarvabhauma said, he's the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He immediately accepted it. And he wanted his darshan. But Lord Chaitanya, when he returned from South India, was not willing to give in his heart. He wanted King Prataparudra's heart to churn, to understand the value of serving the Lord. And he wanted a lesson to be given to the whole world, to you and me, for all time. Maharaj Prataparudra had achieved everything material a person could want. He was the undisputed king. There was no elections every 4 years. He didn't have to make allies with opposing parties to stay in power. Everybody loved him because he was such a fair and loving father to the whole kingdom. He had everything. But he understood that without love for God, without love for Krishna, and he knew that love for Krishna means service to Krishna, that everything he had was like so many zeros. It's Prabhupada's example. Material acquisition, whether it be wealth or fame or followers or knowledge or mystic powers, whatever it means, from a spiritual perspective, it's all zeros. Some people have one zero, some people two, some people have 10 million zeros, some people, they work so hard, birth after birth after birth, and they acquire 100 million zeros. And you know what it takes to defend 100 million zeros? You have to give your whole life to get it, your whole life to protect it. But when you add them all up, it's zero. But when you understand that it's all meant for Krishna's service, bhakti, that's putting a one in front of those zeros. It doesn't mean you have to give up the zeros. You just put a one in front. And then it's actually 10 and 100 and 1,000 and 10,000, 100,000, million, 100 million, billion, trillion, quadrillion. King Prataparudra understood, without devotion to Krishna, my whole kingdom is useless. He was willing to give it all up and become a beggar if that's what it was required to serve Lord Chaitanya. And ultimately, at the time of the Rath Yatra, King Prataparudra, from his heart, he accepted the role of a sweeper of a street. He swept the road. And Lord Chaitanya was watching from a distance. He was not just seeing the sweeping. He was seeing the heart, the intent. King Prataparudra was feeling, I'm just the most humble servant of the Lord. And that moment, Lord Chaitanya decided, I will bestow upon him my full mercy. One of our very dearest friends just a few days ago passed from the world.
I'd like to speak something about him. Because if you open your ears and your hearts to hear what I'm about to say, it will help us all to really understand what is the spirit of Vrindavan. His name, Madan Mohan Brijbasi. He was a Brijbasi from Koshi. Countless generations, as far as I know, as far as time could trace out, his family has lived in Vrindavan, Brajbhumi. And the first time I met him, years and years ago, I had to cry. He was so humble, so sweet, so pure. He just had such natural, spontaneous love for Krishna. And absolutely no trace of envy or ego could we detect in him. He was just a simple, pure Brijbasi. And when he sang kirtan, it was so effortless. It just flowed from his heart. It flowed from his soul, his atma, with love through his mouth. He was perhaps the most popular singer in all of Brajbhumi. For about 30 years, I was told, every day, I think from 5 to 6 o'clock at night, on the all Vrindavan radio station, they would have recordings of him singing. And All India Radio in Delhi, he would record and they would play special shows regularly. But yet, he just loved to serve. He could sing Krishna's names day and night. He would sometimes come to Mumbai. I could speak for hours. Can I tell you one story about him? What time am I supposed to end? The managers haven't decided. So, should I continue? When I was at the bedside of His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj, during his last days with us in this world, we had an agreement that whatever time we spent together all day, we would only talk about Krishna and Lord Chaitanya and the great saints and our beloved Guru Maharaj and the Vaishnavas. Because from the medical perspective, he was supposed to pass from the world every day. When I came, they said he had most 3 days. And I was with him 8 weeks. So that means every day he could go. So the conversations, the kirtans were very deep.
Nothing superficial meant anything. One day, just in the last 1 or 2 weeks, I got a phone call that the Brijabasis that I've known for 43 years now, some of them were coming, they were in America doing kirtan and speaking from the Srimad Bhagavat. And they really wanted to see me. But I knew that usually they're either in Washington, D.C. or New York or California or New Jersey. And here I am in the middle of Pennsylvania. And I promised I wouldn't leave Bhakti Tirtha Swami. I would be at his bedside as long as he was still living with us. So they really wanted to see me. So I said, I'm sorry, I don't think I'm able to come, but find out where they are. And somebody called me back and said, they're in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, which is just a 45-minute drive. So I said to Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj, do I have your permission to go? And actually, I'll try to bring them back to sing for you. And he said, yes, you go. He said, I promise I will stay alive until you get back. So I said, promise? He said, I can't, I'm not the controller, but I promise that's my wish. So I went and I called, are you still alive? Yes, I'm fine. Every now and then I call, are you still alive? Yes. Because he said, I want to die in your arms. And I promised him, so I had to be there. So I went, and they were at some home, Panditji, Narasingha Baba, Giridhar, and Madan Mohanji. They were performing kirtan, Madan Mohanji. And we had prasad, and I told them, my friend, he could die any day. Will you come back with me to sing? They said, yes, we will come. So I had a van. So we were driving, and we came back. We came into Bhakti Tirtha Swami's room. He was laying in his bed, couldn't sit up. And Madan Mohan Brijabasi began to sing a beautiful song about Srimati Radharani and Krishna. In his very pure, spontaneous, loving spirit. And he sang with such simple, sweet devotion. When someone chants Krishna's names or prayers of Sri Radha without ego, with sincere affection, the power of the name can penetrate to our very soul. As Madan Mohan Brijabasi was singing, His Holiness Bhakti Tirtha Swami, he went into a state of total ecstasy. There were only a few of us in the room, but his disciples, who were his caretakers, they had never, ever seen him in this state before. He was uncontrollably crying, not just crying, wailing. I can't try to imitate him. But he was, he was crying out Krishna's name. Tears, torrents of tears were flowing and pouring from his eyes. His limbs were trembling, and he was just crying out loud. And Madan Mohanji was just sitting there singing. He's just a very small man. Everyone was crying. To see Bhakti Tirtha Swami connect to the holy name in that way, all of us had that experience with him. It was incredible. It went on and on. And when finally Madan Mohan Brijabasi ended the singing, Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj was, he was beside himself. With a choked voice, he said that I wanted to leave my body in Vrindavan. But I wanted to show the world that wherever there is a temple of my Guru Maharaj, that is Vrindavan. So I decided to leave my body here. He said, but Srimati Radharani and Shamsundar, Vrindavan came to me in the form of a Brijbasi to bless me before I die. He was so thankful. It was something beautiful. While I was with Bhakti Tirtha Swami, taking care of him, I got a phone call from Mumbai that our very dear devotee, Stoker Krishna Prabhu, had just been diagnosed with the worst possible type of cancer. They said he had 3 weeks to live. I spoke to him on the phone. I've told the story so many times. He was only 32 years old. He was just married about 2 years or 3 years before. He just had a baby. Beautiful little girl. But he was telling me, why is this happening to me? Why am I so fortunate that I had so many opportunities in my life to hear Srimad Bhagavatam? Why am I so fortunate that I had so many opportunities to chant the holy name, to be in the association of devotees, to offer aarti, to attend aarti, to serve? I don't deserve this. I'm so fortunate. That was his mood. He was always smiling and grateful. That was in June, after Srila Bhakti Tirtha Swami Maharaj passed away from the world with hundreds of people around him chanting, crying in love and gratitude. It was the most beautiful departure possible. Then I was coming back to India. The sirens were going off in the airplane, and they announced an emergency landing. The entire control system of the airplane went out. And they would have to land at about 500 miles an hour. And they kept telling the announcement, put your head between your legs. And everybody knew that very likely we are going to die. It was very suspenseful. And I remember I was chanting and I was thinking, Bhakti Tirtha Swami was dying and everywhere in the world people were praying for him and blessing him, and I'm going to probably die and nobody's saying anything for me. It's just me and the holy name and Prabhupada. I was chanting in that state. It was without doubt the best japa I ever had on an airplane in my life. We were bouncing on the runway and there were all fire engines with their hoses and ambulances all around the plane, and we were bouncing and bouncing and bouncing. And somehow
The plane landed. And the fire hose were all around us because they told us at any second that we could be on fire. And finally, the plane started moving. And the pilot said, "We are sorry for the inconvenience." "But thank you for flying with us." "And we hope that next time you fly, you choose British Airways." And that was such an emotional experience for me. Every time I come from India or to India, I go British Airways. Just out of gratitude, because in my own fallen little way, when everybody else was like screaming and crying, I was Hare Krishna. I was actually having a glimpse of Radharani and Krishna while I was chanting. Krishna tells in Bhagavad Gita that in his abode, the spiritual world, there is no need for sun or moon or electricity. Wherever there's a need for sun or moon or electricity, there will be anxiety. That's why his abode is Vaikuntha. But I think I'm trying to philosophically give a lesson to what just happened. Should I try? There is sambhog and vipralamba. There is union and separation. And separation actually increases the experience of love and happiness when there is reunion. And when we take that divine principle and reflect it within this world, it is said absence makes the heart grow fonder. That sometimes we don't understand the value of something or someone until we lose them. It's human nature to take things for granted. But when something's taken away, then we understand how valuable it is. So we've been sitting here and talking and thinking and speaking and so many hours, but we're not thinking, oh, how nice that by Krishna's grace we have, by Sri Radharani's grace, we're in Vrindavan and we have this electricity where we could actually hear. Yes? We take it for granted. But then it's taken away. And now we understand the value of having a sound system to hear. So it's very nice. So I got off the airplane. And met with Stoka Krishna Prabhu. On Advaitacharya's appearance day, a very, very holy day in January, Stoka Krishna Prabhu was going through the very last stages. The night before, or it was maybe the... I saw that he was going, and he was fully conscious. And I said, "Stoka Krishna Prabhu, I believe Prabhupada, Srila Prabhupada, and Sri Radha Gopinath are waiting for you at the other side of that doorway. And he said, I'm ready to go. And he was smiling. He said, I know that they're waiting for me. And I could feel them waiting for me. And I have no attachments in this world. I'm ready. And he was so sincere and so humble and so simple. The next day, I was chanting at his bedside with him. But I was up most of the night, so I was really tired. So I decided to go to my room to rest for a few minutes. So as soon as I laid on the straw mat on the floor, somebody knocked on my door. I was thinking, oh, who is this? So I opened the door, and these devotees, I don't know who they were. They said, we just came from Vrindavan, and we have garlands from Radha Govinda Temple, and Radha Shamsundar, and Krishna Balaram, and from Radharaman. And we have water from Radha Kund and Yamuna and Govinda Kund. And they were giving me all these things and just piles of garlands and all these different little vessels of water. So I went to Stoka Krishna. He's laying there. And I put all the garlands on him and sprinkled all the water on him and put all tulsi leaves from all different places, Seva Kunj and Niduban and the lotus feet of all the deities of Vrindavan. I put it on him. And the kirtan's going on. And then I went in my room and laid down. So I got up. I opened the door. Somebody had just come from Govardhan. And they had the garlands and the tulsi leaves from Raghunath Das Goswami's samadhi. And dust from Govardhan Hill. So I went in and sprinkled it all on Stoka Krishna. And he's just laying there like this. And I went in again to my room to try to get a few minutes rest. I opened the door. It's Madan Mohan Brijabasi. And I just was with him when he was singing for Bhakti Tirtha Maharaj just before he left. And I thought, this is such a blessing. I said, would you like to sing kirtan for Stoka Krishna Prabhu? Yes. He doesn't speak English, but he was just, he could do kirtan day, night, anytime. So he sat and he was playing a harmonium and he was singing and everyone was chanting and I was sitting at the bedside and Stoka Krishna was covered with garlands and tulsi leaves and chandan from all the holy places. And that's how he left this world. Now Madan Mohan Brijabasi, his favorite song. It's a beautiful Brijabasi song, where he's singing about how his greatest prayer in life is to sweep Sri Radharani's palace, to sweep the steps of Sri Radharani's home, to sweep the forest pathways of Gabarvan and Barsana and Sri Vrindavan. This is the prayer. Let this be my only desire, just to sweep the pathways and the steps for Sri Sri Radha Krishna in their abode. And he sang this for so many years. He was 83 years old. He was living at Man Mandir. And every day, as far as I understand, even though he was such a famous singer, such a great, great saintly person, he would spend over 2 hours all alone just sweeping the steps that leading to Radharani and Krishna's temple.
Sweep all the way from the top to the bottom, sweeping. Nobody noticed him. Nobody cared about him. He would just be blissfully sweeping and singing these songs. And the day before Sarat Purnima, he was all alone, sweeping the steps to Shishi Radha Govindji's temple. And Sri Radharani took his life. What he sang his whole life and what he gave his life to was his final moment while sweeping the steps of Sri Radha's temple. He passed from the world. Yesterday, we went to his family's home for the 12-day ceremony and how we were remembering him. But this is how we appreciate Vrindavan. To be a sweeper in Vrindavan is such a blessing. Gaur Kishore Das Babaji saw some sweet little Brijavasi people sweeping. And as they were sweeping, they were covered with the dust that they were sweeping. And he said, these are the most fortunate people in all of creation. You are wealthy. Every particle of that dust is Chintamani. It's priceless. And you are covered with the dust. And one time a person bowed down, did his dandavats to Gaur Kishore Das Babaji and started taking the dust off him. And Gaur Kishore Das Babaji said, what are you doing? Do you know it has taken you millions of births to have the opportunity to be touched by that dust? And you're so recklessly just wiping it off you? This is appreciation. Shamananda. Earlier in his life, his guru, Hriday Chaitanya from Ambika Kalna in Bengal, gave him the name Duki Krishna. And he was a great scholar. He came to live in Vrindavan about 450 years ago. His guru was Hriday Chaitanya. But his Shiksha Guru was Jiva Goswami. He was studying at the Radha Damodar temple, and his classmates were Srinivasacharya and Narottam Das Thakur. Shamananda Goswami was such a pure, enlightened acharya. Later on, he was to have tens and thousands of followers. He was a great scholar of the Vedanta and the scriptures. He was perfect in every way. But every day, for many hours, his seva was just to be on his hands and knees with one of those little Brijavasi brooms. There's no handles. They just take some straw, you have seen, and just wrap something around the top and get on their knees and sweep. And in those days, there was no pavement. He would be sweeping Niduban. That whole area, Sevakun, it was just dusty paths, be sweeping, on his knees sweeping. You see,
There's gyan and there's vigyan.
We can study scriptures. We could memorize slokas. We could memorize philosophy. We could be trained to defeat all opposition to what we believe. But none of that indicates any realization.
Vigyan.
Realization of the knowledge we learn comes through the humility of our service. One of the greatest, most worshipable acharyas to this day was teaching us how to appreciate Vrindavan with such love, with such gratitude. He would sweep the pathways practically all day, every day. And because he was so grateful to be doing this seva in this holy place, feeling himself so undeserving, that Krishna reciprocated. One day when he was sweeping, he found a beautiful, what is it, a bangle, ankle bell, ankle bracelet. He found a beautiful little ankle bracelet. And when he saw it, something happened in his heart where he understood this is very special. Srimati Radha Rani, she put that, she was performing her Leela dancing with Krishna. And just for Shyamananda, it fell off. And Lalita Sakhi, Sri Radha's original expansion and closest friend, she disguised herself and went to Shyamananda and said, "Did you see an ankle bracelet here? I'm looking for it. My dear friend has lost it." And Shyamananda said, "I will only give it to your friend." So she said, "Come with me." And there's prakata and aprakata. Prakata, aprakata, Vrindavan. There's the manifest and the unmanifest. In the unmanifest, it's the Leela of the Lord that is beyond our material vision. That is the inner substance of Vrindavan, the reality. Lalita Sakhi brought Shyamduki Krishna into the inner realm of the aprakata Vrindavan. And Duki Krishna realized that now he had the form of a gopi, and his name was Kanaka Manjari. And Lalita Sakhi brought this little gopi to Srimati Radharani. And he presented the ankle bracelet to Radha. And Sri Radha took that ankle bracelet and pushed it on his forehead and made a tilak, very special tilak, and gave him the name Shyamananda, which means one who gives great pleasure to Sri Radha, whose name is Shyama. And also gave her a deity of Krishna named Shamsundar. And if you go to the Radha Shamsundar temple, you'll see the original smaller deity of Shamsundar that was given by Sri Radharani to Shyamananda Goswami. And then he came back into his form again as Shama, as in this world. And now his name was Shyamananda, and he had this tilak on. And he continued sweeping the dusty pathways of Vrindavan. The rest of the story is very, very beautiful. But what we want to understand from what we have just spoken, because he valued, he appreciated, he was so humble and grateful for the opportunity to sweep the pathways of Vrindavan. He received that darshan. He accessed that grace. We cannot imitate him. But in whatever we're doing, there is no service that's great or small. Any devotional service to the Lord. Let us speak one more story of sweeping, and then we do have to end. Till tomorrow. Narottam Das Thakur. He was the son of a zamindar, a great king, a landowner who had massive wealth. And he left everything with nothing to come to Vrindavan. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, hearing him crying for him, appeared in a vision to Narottam Das Thakur and told him that you go to Vrindavan and Lokanath Goswami will be your guru. When Narottam Das Thakur came, Lokanath Goswami was in such a state because Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami had recently left this world. And his beloved, dearmost friend and Lord, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, had left the world. And Swarup Damodar Goswami and all of his dearmost, they had all left the world. So he was in a state of such deep separation as he offered worship or seva to Radha Vinod, his worshipable deity. And Narottam very humbly approached him and prayed, please accept me as your servant. Lokanath Goswami said, in my life I have never initiated anyone. And I have no intention to do so. I'm feeling so much love in separation, I can hardly even live. How can I start a new life of being a guru? It's not possible. But Narottam Das Thakur, he wanted to serve his guru. Initiate or not, he understood the value of seva. But Lokanath Goswami was so humble, he would not allow anyone to do anything for him. Thakur Narottam, early in the morning, would go to the place in the forest where Lokanath Goswami would respond to the call of nature. Before he would take his morning bath in the river Yamuna. Every morning before he would come, Narottam Das Thakur had a little sweeper. He would sweep the place. With his own hands, he would clean the urine and stool that were left before and sweep it and make it perfectly nice, thoroughly, meticulously beautiful. The next day, Lokanath Goswami would come. He would respond to nature's calls and bathe in the river. This was going on for weeks. And after some time, Lokanath Goswami was saying, "Who's doing this? Why is this place always so clean? It's just the forest, it's just dust, you know, the riverbanks, a little distance." So one morning, he went very early to that place. He hid. He was hiding behind bushes. And he saw Narottam Das Thakur with a little broom sweeping the dust from the riverbanks, sweeping the dust in the forest. Where there was urine and stool, he carefully removed it with his hands and swept and took water from Yamuna and sprinkled it very nicely. And as he was sweeping, with his body covered by the dust, he was weeping in love, in humility, with gratitude, as he was singing beautiful songs. Lokanath Goswami could not believe this. He came out from the bushes. "Narottam, what are you doing? Why? Why are you doing this? You are a prince. You are the son of a king. You're a great scholar. You're a saint. Why? Why are you on your hands and knees cleaning the stool of another person and the urine? Why are you on the ground sweeping the dust? This is not befitting of you." Narottam Das Thakur revealed the essence to all of us in his response. With tears of love and gratitude and a choked voice, he said that "I have left all the treasures and the wealth and the power of the fame of this world to come here. And now, by your grace, Guru Maharaj, I have attained the ultimate fortune, the opportunity to render humble, menial service for you." This is how he valued seva. This is how he valued the simplest, most menial form of seva: sweeping a sewage area. He was not seeing it as a sewage area. He was seeing it as Vrindavan. He was seeing it as Vaishnav Seva. At that time, Lokanath Goswami's heart changed. He said, "Yes, I will initiate you." We have come to Sri Vrindavan Dham following in the footsteps of these great souls. Let this be our meditation. Rupa Goswami and Sanatan Goswami, they were multi-billionaires by today's standards. They were the prime minister and finance minister of an entire kingdom. They had palaces, jeweled ornaments, the best of clothes, the best of foods. They had incredible power, popularity.
They escaped it.
Sanatan Goswami was willing to be persecuted and imprisoned with the hope of coming to Vrindavan. And when they came here, they slept in the dust under a different tree every night. What was their gratitude? What was their appreciation? They were not thinking, I'm sleeping in the hard, cold ground under a tree. And please understand, there were cold winters and hot summers and sometimes wet monsoons. They begged for food. They would get some wheat grain that grew in the sacred soil of Vrindavan. Add some Yamuna water, make a ball, throw it in a blazing fire, take it out, and offer it to Krishna. That's what they were eating. Begging, getting some chickpeas. Cheapest foods. Sleeping on the ground. But they were in the Gopi Bhav. They were in the ultimate happiness. They were so grateful. They were seeing every tree as Krishna's kalpa brikshas. They were feeling the soil as the Chintamani Dham soil. They were grateful. This was a wealth billions of times greater than anything else that can be attained. That's how they were living. Raghunath Das Goswami. We cannot imitate them. But what was their appreciation of Vrindavan? Raghunath Das Goswami would do 2,000 pranams, dandavat pranams to the Vaishnavas every day, to Krishna and Radharani every day, to the devotees every day, 2 lakhs of chanting Hare Krishna every day. And he would do Govardhan Parikrama every day. Such value. So I will end here today with this preparation for our yatra. Inconvenience or convenience? That's all a matter of how you interpret it with your mind. Let us be grateful. And let us really try to appreciate the value of the fortune of what Srila Prabhupada has given us. Entrance into Vrindavan, we have the opportunity to make immense volumes of spiritual advancement at every moment that we're here. Let us see Vrindavan through the eyes of the scriptures and the saints. And let us be grateful to each other. Because if we don't feel gratitude toward the Vaishnavas, if we don't honor and respect the Vaishnavas, there's no possibility of entering into the mood of Vrindavan. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami was living here. He gave us a glimpse. He actually spoke the words of all the great acharyas when he said,
that I offer my prostrated obeisances and worship the dust of the feet of every single devotee. The advanced acharyas, all the way to the newcoming neophytes who are just getting inspired to follow bhakti. Anyone who is approaching Krishna, let me worship them with my heart. This was his gratitude. With this gratitude, with this appreciation for Srila Prabhupada, for the senior devotees, for our friend devotees, for the junior devotees, for each other, for every leaf, for every tree, for every monkey. If a monkey steals your glasses, understand, you could just be angry. Or you could just change your consciousness. Krishna sent that monkey because he wants me to have spiritual vision. He wants me to recognize how I actually really need to have spiritual vision. Every situation is a great opportunity to express our love for Krishna. Let that be the spirit for all of us during our yatra in Sri Vrindavan. Thank you very much.